Penguin Random House Audio presents Captiva by Randy Wayne White. Read for you by George Guidel. Captivity is consciousness. So's liberty. Emily Dickinson. What thou lovest well is thy true heritage. Ezra Pound. 1. The reason I was awake at 4 a.m. when the bomb that killed Jimmy Daru exploded was that my friend Tomlinson and I were on the dock, taking turns squinting through a telescope, inviting, or so said Tomlinson, ocular confirmation that telepathic messages he believed he had received were indeed being transmitted by space creatures. "It's loaded with them out there," he told me. "Sentient beings, for sure. Reliving souls who generate very heavy vibes. They're aware a few of us earthlings are tuned in. Seriously, I shit you not. Couple of weeks ago I just flashed on it. The whole scene. Trust me. They're definitely out there." I thought, so are you, Tomlinson. So are you. But I didn't swing out of bed on a cold January morning in the hope of contacting Tomlinson's deep space kindred. He's a believer, I'm not. However, one of my journals promised there was an interesting planetary oddity to be seen in the pre-dawn sky. Venus was an apogee, and over the period of a few days, which seemed to pass in front of Jupiter. I'm not an astronomer. It's a sometimes hobby. Over the years, I've acquired a working knowledge of the night sky because my poor sense of direction has gotten me lost often enough to know that stars are handy navigational aids. That, plus it makes me uneasy to see something over and over again that can't be identified, which is why I've learned enough waypost constellations to keep me comfortable. So as long as Tomlinson was badgering me to break out the telescope, I decided the best time to do it was when there was something interesting to see. Tomlinson could look all he wanted for signals from space. I'd look at Jupiter and Venus. I woke a few minutes until 3, just before my alarm clock clattered. First thing I did was look across the bay to make sure Tomlinson was awake. Lights were on aboard the 35-foot Morgan sloop that is his home, the portholes creating lemon-pale conduits in the darkness. The guy was up, probably meditating, burning incense, drinking green tea. No telling what else. I lit the propane ship's stove, listening to Radio Havana on the portable shortwave, my thought patterns switching comfortably into Spanish, as I dressed in chino pants and a soft sailcloth shirt. When the coffee was ready, I poured a mug and took it outside. The sky was clear, glittering stars suspended from a purple macrodome. Checked the weather station on the outside wall and found the barometer steady, temperature 49 degrees, cold for the southwest coast of Florida, even in January. Got a bomber jacket from one of the storage lockers and checked my watch. 3:13 a.m. Later, I would relay some of those details to the police detective who investigated Jimmy Daru's death. There is a weight to the early morning hours, a palpable density that's a little like being underwater. You can feel the press of it on your shoulders, the pressure of it in your inner ear. The resonance of one's own heartbeat is the test of silence, a fragile, fragile sound. I went through the list of my morning chores, checked the fish tank, cleaned the filters, checked the complicated pulley system I used to moor my boats, confirmed that some late-night visitor hadn't swiped an engine or the onboard electronics. Lately, a lot of that had been going on up and down the Florida coast. Everything was in order, but I moved more methodically than usual, slowed by the weight of the hour. Then poured another mug of coffee, hunkered down on the porch, and listened to the night noises, waiting for Tomlinson. I live in a remodeled fish storage shack in Dinkins Bay, Sanibel Island. The shack is built over the water on pilings, so I could hear the draw of tidal current, a mountain stream sound, the knuckle pop of pistol shrimp, the bee-wah croak of catfish. The lower level of the house is dockage, the upper level is wooden platform. Two single-room cottages sit at the center of the platform, both under the same tin roof. One of the cottages is home, the other I've converted into a lab. The lab is necessary because I run a small company, Sanibel Biological Supply, selling marine specimens, alive or preserved, to schools and research firms around the country. It's a good place for a biologist to live and work, particularly when the biologist is a bachelor who likes living alone but who occasionally wants company. Dinkins Bay Marina, located down the mangrove shore, provides that when I want it, just as the marina store provides staples such as chips and conch salad and cold beer in quart bottles. From across the bay I heard the ratchet cough of an outboard too cold to start on the first pull. After a couple of more tries, I heard Tomlinson's muted voice, "Japanese scum!" Then the engine caught, and a few minutes later he was tying his Zodiac up at my dock, saying, coffee, I smell coffee. Oh yeah, maybe a beer would be good. Something light, a breakfast beer. Maybe loosen up the receptors, make it easier to communicate. He climbed barefooted up to the main platform, combing fingers through scraggly blonde hair, tugging at his beard, intense, focused, ready to communicate with the universe. As always, he smelled of patchouli, the old hippie perfume. I said, "Interesting choice of clothing, Tomlinson. Gotta look sharp, that's what I always say. Look sharp, feel sharp." "A serape makes sense. Nice Clint Eastwood touch. But a sarong? Isn't it a little cold to be wearing a sarong?" With his long bony legs showing, the man resembled a stork. "Sarong," he said, correcting my pronunciation. "Night like this, my body wants to breathe. Teach Mr. Happy the world's not always a warm and cheery place. Living in Florida has spoiled the both of us." "Ah, self-deprivation is a forgotten path to spiritual awakening. The Buddha didn't live naked in the desert just for laughs."
"Nothing funny about that," I said.
"Pain purifies."
"Yeah, well..."
He was trying to hold down his billowing skirt. "Shit! That wind comes blowing right up the prune whistle. Huh?"
"If you're cold, I've got some sweatpants you can wear."
"Goddamn right I'm cold. Take a whiz, I'd have to goose myself and grab Mr. Happy when he jumped out."
He was pulling open the screen door, headed into the house.
"You want a beer, too?"
"I'll stick with coffee."
"Just in case, I'll bring a couple."
Meaning he would drink them both.
As I told the detective, his name was Jackson, we heard a boat enter the bay sometime between 3:30 and 3:45. There was no moon, just a haze of stars, but I could tell it was a commercial netter's boat by the sound. Net boats are usually open boats, 20 to 24 feet long, and their engines are mounted near the bow through a forward well. Because of the well, a net boat can run 40 miles an hour in 9 inches of water, and turn as if on a spindle, but the prop augurs a lot of air. The cavitation noise is distinctive. Tomlinson and I noticed it at the same time, a bumblebee whine at the mouth of the bay 2 miles away.
"This time of year," Tomlinson said, "those people don't sleep at all, the netters."
He had his eye pressed to the telescope, looking and talking at the same time.
"They got, what, 5 months left? 6?
"The net ban goes into effect in July. After that, they're out of business."
"Yeah," he said, "permanently. People wonder why they're desperate. Fish all day, all night, trying to bail all the mullet they can before the clock runs out. Babies to feed, mortgage payments to make. Shit. Out there alone in a boat, all that on their shoulders?"
I said, "You voted for the net ban. The guilt starting to get to you?"
He looked up from the telescope, as if mildly surprised.
"I did? Jesus, I guess I did. Oh, man. That's exactly why I hate politics, always having to make decisions. But they were wiping out all the fish, and fish can't vote. You're the one told me that."
It was true, but had I told him that? I couldn't remember, although lately it seemed I'd been saying and doing more small, dumb things than usual. What I meant was, it's the migrant netters who come down and strip the place bare. The ones from North Florida, Georgia, Texas, all over. They come down for December and January, take the fish, dump their garbage, and leave.
"The mullet roe season," he said. "That's right. I remember now, they sell the fish eggs to the Taiwanese."
"Taiwanese? Filipinos, the Japanese? They dry it, consider it a delicacy, or can the milt.
Take the seed stock and the fish can't reproduce."
"Exactly." Which was also true. But he was missing the point. Rare for Tomlinson, because the man has a first-rate intellect. Granted, he's eccentric, often bizarre. As a late-60s drug prophet, his mind sometimes takes odd and quirky turns, though it's impossible to say whether it's through enlightenment, as he claims, or
because he has done serious
Sample complete. Ready to continue?